Hi, everybody. Good to see you all.
Hello.
Give everyone a second to get in. Okay. So, welcome everybody. It's great to see you. I hope that you're having a good or good enough week so far. We're in our second call or session of our breakthrough questioning module today. So last week, we looked at foundational principles for breakthrough questioning. There's one or two that we didn't get to cover last week that we'll cover today. And then from there, we're gonna jump right into the heart of today's call, which is looking at different types of questions and when to use those questions, and in what circumstances and how to use them. So we'll get there in a little bit. Before we do, I'd love to hear from one or two of you. Have you been practicing questioning since last week? Have you been thinking about questioning? Have you been thinking about what we covered? What have you noticed for yourself? What have you noticed in your sessions? What wants to be shared about questioning? Or have you just not thought about it at all? Okay, some of you have. Good. Deva.
Hi. We did our sessions, and I've just found it really helpful to put the practices into play with the coaching, particularly that I'm more used to working with groups. And so having the one-on-one sessions of finding that balance of deep listening and then where to interject and where to find the pause and how far to let a client go without bringing in a question, and that it's such a fine line of listening and how much how much venting versus and then where I want to consult versus question. And so it's been really helpful to look at, like, here's the tools. And then also, I'm used to being like, let's go into a guided visualization or bring in singing bowls, or I'm, used to having other tools that are familiar. And so to really challenge myself to not bring in the other tools at this point and see, like, okay, maybe I can weave them in future sessions, but at this point, just really trying to work with the tools from the sessions that we're doing of questions and listening and equal playing field.
I can see that you're holding the pieces and you're working with them, and having all of that in your awareness and practice. And it sounds like I just really want to acknowledge you for stretching. This is a new way of being and working. And I know that that's not always easy. It takes courage and it takes commitment. I love what you're saying, that the guided visualizations or meditations or the singing bowls are there for you, for when you need them. But it sounds to me like you're starting to think with even more intentionality, when is it the best time for those tools and when is it the best time for some other tools. So really nicely done. So happy to hear
Thank you.
Randa.
Hi, Hi, David and I just got off the phone with one of our sessions, so that's where we're both like in it. I think what I'm finding, it's very helpful to practice in between because every week we go over new stuff, and even a week later, I'm like, what did we talk about last week? And I guess I'm getting sometimes a bit confused on like which part I'm trying to practice during that one. I'm like, okay, practice all of the deep listening. But one thing that came up was that I'm used to people coming to me for the answer. And so whether it's like, hey, show me how to become calm, show me how to like become more, like reduce stress in my everyday, and so that I can think clearly and all of those kinds of things. So I guess it's an interesting place because I've l tried on more of the deep listening types of questions with the clients recently. And at the end with one of them, he was like reaching so hard. He just like couldn't come up with anything concrete. And I'm like, we need action steps. Like we just, so by the end, it was really hard for me. It was like, I ended up asking a bunch of leading questions. And I recognized it at the time, but I'm like, you need something to walk away with because you're not going to see you for 3 weeks. So I did end up leading him into that space, but it more felt like it was just because we needed to get somewhere and I couldn't leave him hanging without a tool to take away to use for that week or two. So that's like, are leading questions appropriate at some stage when you're like, oh, or is there just a different way of questioning to get there?
Yeah, it's such, I'm so glad you're bringing it up. So there's a couple of pieces here, and I'll get to that question too, I promise. If you have the time, which you might not, I think it could be really valuable to go back if you can remember and see which are the questions that worked, either with him or with others. And then for the ones that he was grasping, if you can remember what you asked and try to see why you sense it didn't work or didn't work for him in that moment, right? Because it's always coaching the what based on the who. So that's one thing that I think could be really valuable if you could kind of go back and assess a little bit for the ones that worked, why did they work and what were they? And then for the ones that didn't, why in that moment or with that client not. From there, it sounds like you did exactly what the client needed, which was you consulted at that point. And remember, consulting isn't bad. We just want to be aware when we do. We don't want it to always be the default. And we always want to give the client choice in the matter. Not to say, like, this is the truth with a capital T, this is what you need to do. And my guess, you didn't exactly say this, but tell me if this is true, is that you didn't just give him cookie cutter suggestions because of the deep listening that you were doing throughout the session, hearing exactly where he was at, what he might need. You crafted your leading questions or recommendations or consulting based on that. Am I getting that right? Yeah. So absolutely, I have, so first of all, there are moments for consulting, half questions, yes. And if those happen to be leading questions, it's okay. So long as you provide for the client's agency. And it sounds like you did a whole bunch of listening to craft those suggestions before there. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally does. And I even worked through the awkward spaces and awkward silences. And I was like, okay, he's coming up with the answer. I'm going to be patient. So I was definitely stretching. But yes, I recognized that there was like three leading questions when it got closer to the end so that I could try to push him along. And I was just wanted to check if that was like okay at some points, but just to be aware of them or.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you're asking this because this is helping me kind of articulate even more. Sometimes when we have an expertise, like how to calm the nervous system or business or, you know, whatever it is. And Sophie was getting at this question last week too. There are certain things that we know that our clients don't know, right? So if we ask them, so what do you want to do? They are going to grasp because they just don't have that knowledge. So it's like sometimes you can think about a session of asking open-ended questions for the client to find their own realizations or their own visions or preferences or blocks, whatever it is. But then when it gets to the, well, what is it that you actually want to do? Oftentimes there is more consulting in that piece, or, you know, we can call it leading again, so long as we still leave it in the client's court to see if that feels like a place they want to go, or how do they want to tweak that action, or what, you know, what, based on the suggestion, what's the best move forward from there?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, great question. Michaelyn.
Hi, I'm just laughing because I had a session with you yesterday, Joanna, with our private, and I walked away going, oh my God, she's so brilliant. She's so good. She's so masterful. And at one point you even said during the session, I'm just giving you back the words that you gave me. So it really reiterated to me, like as the client, that asking questions and then just repeating, not just repeating, but in essence, just repeating back what the client says to you is so powerful in itself. Like if we can just do that, that is so much.
Yeah.
And holding the space, you know, the trust and the relationship and the rapport with the practitioner and the client is such a huge part of it. And the questions that you asked me, you know, they were bold and there was a whole variety of them, but really you just allowed me to say what I wanted to be saying and needed a little bit of encouragement to say. So it just a really good noticing for me about how that works.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, so a couple pieces in there, first back to creating awareness, just simply reflecting back what our clients have said so that they can receive what they said, because sometimes we say things but we haven't embodied what we've said, just to allow that space to receive and embody what the client themselves have said is just so huge, such a value in and of itself. And then in our session, you know, back to Randa's question, I did make some suggestions about, okay, now that we have, like, all of this has come through, what are some next steps here? I made suggestions and then we kind of tweaked them together. This can do it this way, I'm going to try this, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Good. Barbara.
I just wanted to piggyback on what Michaelyn was saying and ask a question about this. The difference between reflecting back in the client's own words what they're saying and paraphrasing it, and because I realized that I have a tendency to paraphrase things, and it's not because I'm like trying to like wrap my own head around it, and so I won't use their words because my way of thinking isn't going to be identical to theirs. So I'm just wondering, is that like something I need to work on, you know, or does it, like I was thinking about it, does it also have the possibility of bringing like a greater awareness to the person?
Absolutely. So. Yeah. So we looked at that last week and I was saying do both. So I want to encourage you, since you're already masterful and comfortable with the bringing your terminology in, which is a great way of creating new awareness for clients, still do that. Don't let that go. But see if you can at least once in every conversation, what's the right moment to actually reflect back the words or the phrases that the client said. Where are the moments that you sense that what the client just said in those words is actually really important for the client to receive even more deeply. So I'd find maybe one place in each session that that would be appropriate, build the muscle that way.
Thank you.
Yeah, great cue. All right, there's a bunch of things happening in the chat. Veronica's always thinking about questioning. Good. Ayana's saying the questioning has been the hardest for me so far. All of the other skills have felt natural. Questioning has felt like a much bigger stretch. When I do ask questions, I really challenge myself to not ask leading, because that's where, that's so, just a great awareness, Ayana. We all have our places that feel like bigger stretches, and I love that you're challenging yourself not to ask leading questions. Yeah, and Veronica's saying, I reflected back a phrase to a client yesterday and she didn't even realize she'd said that thing. It opened up a whole new conversation. It's amazing, right? We say things we don't even realize. Okay, so there were two pieces that we didn't get to last week, foundational principles of questioning that I wanted to make sure, actually three that I wanted to make sure we got to today. The first is, when you're asking questions, make connections. When you're asking questions, make connections. So what I've found is that one of the many powerful roles that we have as practitioners is to support our clients to make connections. And I'll give you an example of this in a moment. A breakthrough can happen in a moment of making a connection. So for example, let's say you're working with a client and they're talking about seeing social media posts and really feel other people's social media posts and really feeling bad about themselves, comparing themselves to others, etc. You might want to ask, what other life situation does this remind you of? Or where else in your life outside of social media do you experience this? Or maybe you remember, as your client is sharing this about social media, maybe you remember that on a previous session, this client was describing her relationship with her sister as competitive. Make that connection. Maybe you want to ask, how does this connect to your relationship with your sister? In making that connection, that client will be able to see that it's not just in this tunnel, although we should all be on social media less because it does encourage doom and gloom comparison for sure. But it can support a client to see, oh, this is a pattern in my life where I start to move forward and then I start comparing myself to others and then I get dejected or I get, you know, less inspired, or and then I end up just focusing all of this energy on myself versus the project at hand. Or maybe that can support then an exploration of, well, how did you work it out in that other area of your life? What are some tools that you used, and can we apply them now to this social media situation? So you want to think about making connections. Does that answer your question in the chat, Sophie? Yeah. Any thoughts or questions on making connections before I move on to the next principle?
Can
Can I actually expand my question, Joanna? I find that I just have so many ideas about directions to go all the time. And my fear with this is I'm like, oh, we could go there. And we end up going down rabbit holes. And there's just so many places we could go. We're so complex. I liked how you said, like, how could the way that you applied it there help here? I guess that's the way of just making sure that it's up to me to keep bringing it back, which is my discipline and practice. Yeah,
absolutely. So I'm glad you're bringing this up, and this can be a helpful way for you and maybe everybody to think about it. As we looked at last week, whenever we go to ask a question, and really just throughout a session, we always want to track what's the end result that the client wants. And I know it sounds complicated, like how do we like think of a question and we're, you know, but it will come, like the more you practice, it's going to be there in the back of your mind. So when we're tracking, right? Okay. How are we moving forward towards this end result that the client said they wanted for this session? It will help you as you ask questions, think about, well, what's the purpose of the question that I want to ask next? And then you won't go off on the tangent. It might, yes, be like a side thing, but it's also always related to moving forward. Does that make sense?
That's helpful. Thanks.
Okay. And the more you practice it, the more you're probably already doing it in so many ways. And the more you practice it, the more it'll come. I love what Amy's sharing in the chat. To ask that internal question of ourselves, what part of the client is trying to emerge, what is most supportive to the client. Yeah.
Joanna, can I ask a question about making connections? Mm-hmm. So yesterday in a client session, I was feeling like I was really rocking the questions. And at one point it was with a doctor really struggling with a patient and what was coming up. And I could tell that there were some really big energetic pieces that were kind of lodging in and getting in the way. And so I was asking about when in other circumstances, this kind of experience or her like somatic experience basically had been showing up. And she started making the connections and she's like, wow, this took me back to early childhood. And she started seeing all these things. It was really awesome. And I was really sensing there was somewhere else that we could go, but I've also been practicing slowing down. And so it just kind of wrote it out and stuck with it. And then it was like close to completion time. And I definitely found myself being like, should we have gone further? Should I have taken it further? And I'm just wondering sort of how, like when you get to a place that you can feel that there's more, how you assess when to keep going. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's such a good question. With probably a very, very long answer. So let me think how I, okay. Some of it has to do with time and where you're at in the session, right? So as Randa was saying earlier, we always want to leave time at the end of a session, not just for takeaways, but for strategizing next steps. So we want to, you know, we're always kind of also aware of time. It's like time kind of opens up in a session, but we also want to be aware. So if we're moving into those last minutes, there aren't action steps or strategizing hasn't happened yet. I will often take what's come through and then support the client based on what's come through to create next steps. Now, sometimes those next steps can also be inner, right? They do not just have to be an outer action. So it can be journaling questions that go deeper. We'll do a whole, I mean, it's in a long time from now in this program, but we will do a whole session on how to use journaling questions for one-on-one clients. So it can be journaling questions that you leave them with that support them. So that's when it's kind of like a time, okay, we're getting there. If you're more like halfway through the session, I mean, you know, some of it is intuition. Sometimes I'll say, and we spoke about this last week, you know, we could go deeper into this, or we can kind of move into this, right? And I might speak that aloud, and see where the client wants to go. And then a third thing to think about is sessions aren't vacuums in and of themselves. You're in a full container with a client. You might bring it in the next session as well. Does that give you some things to think about?
Yeah, that's great. It was a little bit too, just wondering, like, is it good to speak? We could continue down this, because sometimes I'll say, I would love to follow up with you on this next session. I'll just make notes of it. But I don't want to be like, I don't know, sticking the carrot out there when they're, you know, I want to be present with what is, right? And also keep allowing for space to go deeper. So this is really helpful to think through. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. All right. Let's look at another principle. This is a principle, not just for questions, really for everything, but you want to think about it in your questions. Some of you have heard me speak about this before in other places, but it's good to always have a review. You want to think about what level of learning and processing wants to be activated for the client in that moment. I'm going to explain what I mean by that, but I'll say it again. You want to think about what level of learning and processing wants to be activated for the client in that moment. There are what I call four levels of learning and processing. There's the cognitive level or the intellectual level, understanding something intellectually, identifying a new belief, understanding a new vision, seeing a pattern, having a new idea emerge, right? The things that we really connect with cognitively, intellectually. We need a lot of that, right, in sessions in general. But oftentimes practitioners leave the whole session just on the cognitive level. To create true transformation, you want to bring it to other levels as well in different moments. So another level of learning and processing is what I call the heart level, right? Is there a moment where a client needs is not a new idea or a new awareness or a new understanding, but actually what they're needing in that very moment is an emotional connection to what you're talking about, to what they're looking at? Do they need to feel the love for it? Do they need to recognize their anger and feel the anger about the situation? Is really what's most important is for them to sense into their grief in that moment, their excitement in that moment. So sometimes we want to ask questions, and when I go through different types of questions, I'll get more specific on this, but sometimes, so we want to sense into, is that what actually a client needs in this moment? Maybe you feel like, oh, you know, they're not really, they said this idea that they're saying they're excited about, but I'm not sensing that they're emotionally connected to it, right? So you might want to ask an emotion-based question in that moment. Another level of learning and processing is what I call the spirit level of learning and processing. This does not have to be spiritual or religious, though it can be. The spirit level of learning and processing is, you want to use that in a moment where you sense it would be really helpful for the client to connect to something that is bigger than their ego or themselves. When we connect to something that is bigger than our ego or ourselves, whether that's God, spirit, universe, our great grandmother, nature, you know, whatever that is, our inner wisdom, it creates trust, right? When we connect into something bigger than ourselves, whatever that is, it creates trust. So if you sense that a client, what a client really needs in that moment is a deeper sense of trust to what you're speaking about. Amy's saying in the chat, it gives perspective. Absolutely. It brings in new wisdom that cognitively maybe you couldn't think of. Then you want to ask a spirit-based question in that moment. I'll give some examples in a little bit. And then the last level of learning and processing that you want to be aware of is the body level or the somatic level. Can be similar to the emotional level because we feel our emotions in our body. This is about, for me, this is about either making a body memory of something. So a new idea has emerged. It feels a certain way. Maybe there's been that emotional connection. Let's go deeper and actually like create a body memory around that vision or around the feeling of that vision. So that's one way that you can use the body level. Another way, a moment where the body level can be really useful is when we use our body, and it's back to body memory in a way, when we use our body, we embody something more, right? Like we own it more, we embody it more. So is it a moment where a client maybe is ready, they've been talking about a part of themselves that is new for them, they've never considered before, maybe their leader, the part of themselves that's the leader, right? And it's been this great conversation and they're ready to embody their leader self more. So you may ask a body question or give them a prompt to embody more. And this body level, it can be activated in many different ways. I'll just share briefly now. For those of you that are doing coaching partner practice sessions, practicing a skill is embodying it. It's activating the body level of learning and processing. Let's say you're talking with a client about a conversation that they want to have with a coworker, role-playing the conversation embodies it. It activates the body level of learning and processing. Asking a client to stand up and take a pose that would represent the vision or the part of themselves or how they want to feel, that's activating the body level of learning and processing. We could do like 3 weeks on all of this. I'm giving you brief now, and then I'll give you some examples with questions in a little bit. But let me pause here. What's feeling important about the four levels of learning and processing? What are you seeing that is resonating for you here? What's it bringing together for you here? Anyone want to share? Randa's asking, how would you bring in the spiritual? I'll give some examples in a little bit, but just real quick right now, what is your inner wisdom telling you about this situation? Or if you know that your client really loves Oprah, what would Oprah say about this situation, right? Because that's bigger than the ego. What would spirit say about this situation? Yeah, Michaelin's, you do this instinctively, but it's good to make it more conscious. Absolutely. Tina, did you want to share something?
Yeah, I have a quick question about the spiritual level. If the client, I know you mentioned nature as part of it, if they didn't have a belief in like God or the universe or anything, but do you find that someone who doesn't have a belief in something bigger than themselves has more of a challenge in forming trust?
That's such a great question that I have to think about. I don't know. And if anybody has thoughts, please put them in the chat. I love that. My inclination is to want to say no, just because, like, even in the example I just gave, what would Oprah say about that? Or, you know, whatever. For me, it's like, what would Tori Amos say? You know, so it may not, it doesn't have to be God or spirit or anything related to spirituality. It'd be like, it can also, you know, be as you look through your children's eyes. How do you want them to see this situation? There's even like a little bit of an inherent trust in that, in a way. So I don't know. Let me know if I'm answering your question. I might not be.
I have to think about it. I have to let that sit with me for a while, because I just find that when there's not faith of something, anything, that it's harder for that person to make breakthroughs and transformation, because they're just not seeing something bigger. You know, they can only see like what's right here.
Yeah. I think it's a great question to think about. Veronica's saying in the chat, similar to what I said, that she's found it's not the case. Connection is trust, God, et cetera, but it doesn't matter. Do they feel connected to something larger? A community, their environment, another person. Amy's saying the dreams can activate it as well.
Okay, cool. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, it's a great, great question to think about. I'm going to read one more thing from the chat, Marianne, and then we're going to move on because we still have a lot to do today. We can absolutely continue this conversation in the Facebook group as well, though, and in your cohort groups also. Marianne is saying, I'm noticing that for me, I can have a cognitive grasp of an issue, but still lack the ability to change my energy, habit, or behavior until I go deeper and progress to that heart, spirit, body level. Yes, absolutely. That's one of the reasons why it's so important. Just because we understand something cognitively, and it's so important to understand things and make those connections, all of that, that is often not enough to create change. We need the heart, at least one of the three, if not all of the other three, if not all of them, the heart, the spirit, and the body level, to bring those online with the change as well. Okay. Last foundational piece that I want to mention for today, when it comes to questions, know that sometimes something is meant to remain in the mystery. Not every question is meant to be answered. This is an energetics piece, also. When we move into the place of like, you know, there has to be full clarity here. And if there isn't full clarity, it means that I'm not a good coach and I'm not a good practitioner and I didn't ask the right question, right? Then we're like, we're attached. There are some questions that just aren't meant to be known or answered in that moment. And it doesn't mean that the asking of the question was a waste of time, because you're planting a seed with it. Right? We'll do a whole session on being in the mystery, and there's a lot of pieces to that. But the one thing that I'll just say right now is another one of our jobs is as practitioners, aside from supporting our clients to get the results that they want and all of that, is to support them in understanding that there are times for knowing. And there are times for the mystery, and that's part of the human condition. And there's so much beauty and magic to that. Okay. All right. So from here, what I want to do with the rest of our time together today is I want to look at different types or categories of questions that we can ask our clients, when to use them, etc. You have in your resource, in the member center, a whole resource sheet on this. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm going to highlight some of them today. As we move in, there are a couple things that I just want to say. It's a lot of information that we're going to go through today. Don't get overwhelmed. So you don't need to memorize all of this stuff or have this fully integrated by the time, you know, it's 2 p.m. Eastern. That's number one. If you are a newer practitioner, my invitation to you as we go through the material today is to just delight in it, to enjoy it, it's going to be so interesting to you. Don't worry about integrating it in this moment. I will share with you that for the first number of months that I coached, every single session, every single client session, I had a list of like that I found of like the 50 most common coaching questions out there. And I had that list with me as a crutch. I'm going to be totally honest, as a crutch. Every now and again, I would look at it in a session. Mostly I just liked, for safety reasons, I like to have it there. Why am I mentioning this to you? Because we don't know all the questions. We never know all the questions. Even at this point, you know, for me in the game, right? It's just about being present, integrating, practicing. Maybe you want to pick a couple to practice with. Print out this list if you want. Have it there as a crutch in your next sessions. If you are a more seasoned practitioner and you're really good at asking questions, first of all, yay! I want to invite you to open your ears even more deeply today. Sometimes we can get into a rut with the questions that we ask. If we're really seasoned and experienced, it's like we kind of just ask the same. We know the ones that work and we do them, which is great. I'm not telling you to lose those from your repertoire at all, but use this time today and this time over these next few weeks as we practice questioning to bring more types of questions and the ways that you craft questions into your toolbox. So for you, you might want to pick like three or four different types of categories that we look at today that maybe aren't in your regular repertoire and set the intention to see when you might insert those into client sessions. Okay. So we already looked at the first category of question in our creating awareness module. So I'm just gonna mention that one real quick, but it's the am I getting that right question. So we wanna use an am I getting that right question after we've reflected back to a client or created awareness by mirroring, reflecting a hard truth, etc. I'm hearing X. Am I getting that right? It sounds like you're saying, why did I hear that correctly? As you were speaking, I could almost sense that Z, am I getting that right? Right? So those are, am I getting that right questions? Yeah, Sophie, we're going to be looking at the four levels of learning and processing really from here on in the entire program, but I'm also today going to mention specific places and categories of questions. All right, here's another category. This is one that's often overlooked, but is actually, because it's so simple, but it's actually an incredibly powerful question when used in the right moment. I call them definition questions. So you might think that you know what a client means when they use a certain term or talk about a certain concept, but don't make assumptions. You as a practitioner might actually be working with a very different definition of that term than the client is. So it's important to sometimes ask. Also, it's so powerful for an individual to define a term that they've just maybe been using on autopilot, but to actually define it for themselves, right? If they mention freedom, what does freedom mean to you? If they say they want a romantic relationship, define a romantic relationship. What is a romantic relationship for you? If the client is talking about balance and desiring balance, explain balance a little bit more. Tell me more about what balance is. A biggie is for people, I mean, all of these are biggies, but one of the biggest for me that I've noticed for people is success, right? They talk about success, right? But it can mean so many different things. And sometimes we haven't even stopped to think about, well, what does success actually mean for me? What does a good relationship with my kids actually mean for me? Another way to use a definition question is, how is X different than Y? So for example, how is space in your schedule different from space in your mind or your body, right? So if a client is talking about wanting more space and you go straight to the schedule and the time, right? How is space in your schedule different from space in your mind or body? It can open up so much. How is self-trust different than self-confidence? What's the difference between service and servitude? So, definition questions. Here's another type of question. Clarifying current situation questions. Clarifying, a question that will help clarify the current situation. You want to use this kind of question when it feels important to gather more details on a current situation, either because you as the practitioner need more details in order to hold the space and support the client, or because you sense it would be important for the client to get into and express and share and consider some of the details to create awareness for themselves. Now, the thing with clarifying current situation questions is we always want to watch ourselves where we go into, we always want to be curious, but we just want to make sure that we don't cross the line into like, ooh, I don't know what the right word is, like curiosity for just for curiosity's sake, or, you know, because you get like really sucked into the story and you want to hear more, right? It's different than a conversation with a friend. On the clarifying current situation questions, you want to have a purpose for it. So it's either because you truly as the practitioner need more details so that you can understand more, or by sussing out and looking at the details, you really sense that the client will be able to see nuances in things that are important for them or have awarenesses. So examples of clarifying current situation questions. Well, what exactly did she say during the team meeting, right? Let's say a client said, that team leader, she just like shamed me, embarrassed me, whatever it is. Can you share a little bit more about what exactly she did say? Another clarifying the current situation question. This is more, the example I'm going to give next is a little bit of a leading or multiple choice question based on expertise, but sometimes it it can be important for clarifying a situation. So when you say that nobody signed up for your program, right, somebody would be like, nobody signed up and it was a failure and nothing worked, right? Just, and the result, like there's nobody there, right? So you might want to ask a clarifying current situation. So when you say that no one signed up, can you describe a little bit more what happened? And then sometimes I might again, give my some consulting options there. Was there zero interest at all? Or did you have some enrollment conversations, but those didn't convert? Did you have follow-up questions? So that's kind of breaking a bunch of rules that I spoke about last week, stacking questions, leading, et cetera. But there is, as we've been kind of looking at last week and this week, there are moments to break rules. If a client says a date went badly, well, how did the date go badly? Here's another kind of clarifying the current situation question. What are you overlooking? So in that conversation with your sister, what was the piece that you overlooked? What was your intention when you canceled that doctor's appointment? All right, let me pause here. Any thoughts or questions on am I getting that right questions, definition questions, or clarifying the current situation questions? Anything that wants to be spoken or asked about those? Randa. Oh, I can't hear you.
Hi. So the last part of the questions there, where you said, what are you overlooking? It's a similar type of question I had last week, which is like, that's a bold thing. Like, hey, you're not seeing the answer. What's missing? And as if it sounds to me like you're like, well, I know the answer. So what are you missing? What are you overlooking? And I'm the softener. So is there something you're overlooking, or is it like, because that to me sounds like the coach knows the answer and I'm just like, you need to figure this out and you need to give me the right answer.
So, okay, I think there's a couple pieces here. So the first is, we've already looked at this a little bit, but I want to ask you again, what's your fear in being bold?
It seems aggressive.
Talk more about that.
It's calling someone on something which feels like I might break the safe container.
Why does it feel like it might break the safe container if you're calling someone?
Because my safe containers are built upon softness and open conversation, and it is just always that ambiance of the what are you overlooking type of question feels, it's not quite judgy, but it's like attacking or something, like something just puts, it might put the person on the defensive. Mm-hmm. That's, I guess, what my fear is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for sure, there are certain people in certain moments that it could put them on the defensive. And so in those moments, absolutely, like we looked at last week, soften it. You might say, not sure, and I don't even know what it is, but I'm sensing there might be something that you're overlooking here. Does that spark something for you, right? So you can for sure soften it. And then I love what AJ is saying in the chat, so well said, better than what I was about to get to, which is that some of this might be about you and your fear. And that's a great definition question that AJ is asking.
Thanks,
what is
AJ.
The difference between softness and timidity? I think that if that lands for you, I'd love for you to journal on that one.
Okay.
What are you, just from this short conversation, what are you taking for yourself?
The timidity, and like, it's not weakness, it's timid. So thank you for wording it that way, AJ. But yes, it's a lack of wanting to push someone to a point of feeling like they're being attacked, and being really like maybe overly cognizant of that, and cautious of it. So there's probably some playing around that can be done, but it happened recently where I've offended someone and I'm like, okay, I pushed someone's boundary and that was too much. So then I'm still reeling from that, I think.
So yeah, I remember you saying that, and I want to honor that, that can be so hard as a practitioner when we feel that we've pushed someone and it makes sense to reel from it. And what I want for you is, first of all, to always coach the what based on the who. So there may be situations where absolutely that softness is what's needed. But then there may be other situations where loving boldness, never with shame or judgment, where loving boldness might serve your client better. And so I want for you to have more freedom in feeling like you can move in those two different spaces for yourself.
And I feel like actually some of it might come with definition of coach versus energy healer, which is where I started. So energy healer holds space and assists with the healing process versus coaching, which is a different role. So it might be the definition right from the beginning as to the relationship and the expectations.
I love that. I love that. I'm so glad that that's coming through. And I think that's another great place to explore.
Okay. Cool. Good. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Let's keep on going. We're going to have a whole module about visioning. So just let you know that on your resource sheet for this week, there's a whole bunch of visioning questions, and we're going to get deep into the details and crags of that. All right, so another type of question that I want us to take a look at together is what I would call feeling questions. So Sophie, this is where we get to some of the other levels of learning and processing. A feeling question can sometimes be a heart level question. It can sometimes also activate the body level. As I said earlier, feel like they're, you know, it's not like this clear demarcation between heart and body. There's crossover. So when do we want to use a feeling question? One type of scenario where we want to use a feeling question is if there have been a series of intellectual awarenesses or mental or cognitive level awarenesses, and it's been a lot on the intellectual level. We want to probably bring it to the body or the heart at some point in the conversation. So if it's just been highly intellectual, I want to watch that. Or you might want to use a feeling question when you just sense, when you're just because you're being present and doing deep listening with your client, you sense that they, as I said earlier, they're talking about the idea or whatever it is they're talking about, but they need a deeper type of connection to what they're speaking about. Or when you sense that there isn't an emotional resonance with what they're discussing. So examples of feeling questions are, how would that feel, right? They're talking about something they want to do, a conversation they want to have, a project, whatever. How would that feel? Another example is, how do you feel in your body as you describe that? right? Giving them an opportunity to move a little bit from here into like, how does it feel in your, as you describe that, how does it feel in your body? What is your heart telling you? That could also be a spirit level question, by the way, right? What is your heart telling you about this idea or this stuck place, etc.? What do you notice about the tone of your voice as you speak about whatever it is, your sister, that idea, that experience? What do you notice about the tone of your voice? In the right moment, sometimes asking what's underneath that can activate body or heart level. An example of that, I was working with somebody yesterday and they were talking about their disinterest in something that we both knew was really important to them. It was like how they've been so disinterested. And I said, if you just feel into your body, what emotion is right underneath the disinterest? And it was like right away, boom, fear. And it, you know, we went from there. Here's another type of feeling question. What's an image that reflects that situation? Recalling an image, it's not just intellectual. It brings the client into their body. It can bring them into their feelings. Sometimes you can do that as a reflection too, if in a moment where a client is talking about something and you sense you want them to take the feeling in. As you're speaking, it reminded me of a racehorse waiting right at the gate, right? That evokes a feeling and an emotion, that like waiting for the door to open and go. What would feel exciting here? If you were to move forward with this situation, what would feel exciting? What would feel joyful, etc.? Motivation questions. So motivation questions definitely dovetail on spirit level. Activating the spirit level can support someone to be more motivated, to do something, to move forward, etc., etc. So you want to use a motivation question when a client needs some motivation. So when they're aware of their deeper whys, their motivations, it's easier to move forward. You want to use a motivation question when you sense that a client, it would be really helpful for a client to have a bigger reason, to have a mission, to have an inspiration to move forward. It's one thing to have an idea. It's another thing to really see and feel into the bigger reason for that idea, the mission. Whether it's a big idea or just like having a conversation with your partner, that's a hard conversation to have. So examples of motivation questions, what's your deep why here? Why is that so important to you? Or what's so important about that? Here's another kind of motivation question. What value of yours will that experience fulfill? What value of yours will that, right? Because values are part of what motivates us, inspires us. They're the bigger reason why. Why, if you know that a client uses the spirit language, why would spirit be asking you to do this? Why would God, etc., whatever their language is? What's the higher reason here? What's the divine reason here, if that's language the client resonates with? What's the bigger picture is also a motivation question. What's the bigger picture? All right, I'll share one more category and then we'll pause and see what questions there are. This is one of my favorite categories. It's a very underlooked one, but used in the right moment, it can be a very powerful question. Percentage or number questions. So you want to use a percentage or a number question when a client needs support distinguishing story from reality. When a client needs support distinguishing story from reality, or when a client is unclear about their truth, or if they've just shared something that to your sense maybe seems misaligned to you. So an example of a number question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how true is that statement? Or let's say a client was just saying that none of their friends, or their friends just never think about their best interest. My friends never think about my best interest. What percentage of your friends are not thinking about your best interest? Or what percentage of the time? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you actually want to apply for that job? Percentage or number questions can also help a client affirm something that they really want to do, right? Like if you're like, you know, your client is going to answer a 10, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you actually want to apply for that job? That 10 can be a motivating factor as well. All right, let me pause here. Any questions or thoughts on feeling questions, motivation questions, or percentage or number questions? Nope. All right, we'll keep on going then. We're going to get into strategizing questions in our visioning and strategizing module. So I'm going to save the details for that, but you've got some on your resource sheet there. Getting support questions. Getting support questions. So when a client, when we sense a client is overwhelmed or taking on too much, we want to ask a getting support question. Who can help you with this? If you knew they'd say yes, what would you ask for help? Or who would you ask for help? What can you delegate? What requests can you make? It's such a, like, I don't know, I guess obvious thing, like ask for help, right? But most human beings don't think that that is an, they don't even think to think that it could be an option. So sometimes bringing that, yes, Kelly's saying sometimes we need permission to ask for help, exactly. Simplifying questions. So this is also when a client is overwhelmed or taking on too much. It might not be a getting support question, that they need, but it might be a simplifying question that they need in that moment. What can you start saying no to today? What can you simplify in this situation? What's no longer serving you here? What's no longer aligned here that's ready to be let go? A simplifying question can be, what's the priority? I'm gonna move a little bit more quickly. Integration questions. So we may have already spoken about this here. After a lot of awareness has been created, or if there's been a lot of different strands or threads or ideas that have come through a conversation, you want to ask an integration question. You don't want to just like keep on going, sprinting through everything. You want to pause to do some integration when a lot of things are coming through. So, what are you seeing for yourself here? What's important about these last three pieces that you just mentioned? As we look at these different threads, what's the wisdom that's coming forward? What are you learning here? And of course, we want to ask the integration question at the end of the session too. What's the takeaway, etc. We spoke about interruption questions last week. Somebody asked about that. Definitely want to lovingly have permission to interrupt a client if they're not getting to the point, or using details or unimportant threads as distractions. We just pause them lovingly and with respect, and then ask a question. What's the essence of what you're saying here? What feels most important about what you've been sharing? Sometimes, if it's the right moment, Randa's going to hate this question. Sometimes, if it's the right moment for a client, I might say, I sense you're beating around the bush. What are you avoiding here? AJ, I'm going to get to you in a sec. Sophie's asking, can you give an example of lovingly interrupting? Yeah, I want to just pause you here for a moment. You've been sharing so much, and I know there's a lot of important pieces in here. I've been listening really deeply. I just want to take a moment and ask you what feels most important about everything that you're sharing. That's one example. AJ.
Yes, thank you on the interrupting questions. this came up yesterday in my partner call, and I had like a big revelation and learning around it. We had, you know, a fairly contained time frame. And in the practice of questioning, I was keeping that top of mind, this questioning. So trying to find the moments to break in, find a pause if there's not one, and then in my work, I find this to be really challenging with clients, because often I'm accepting that people share deeply with me people get very vulnerable and open. And we then veer off from what might be the goal. If it's just like, I want to set up this money structure, can you help me do that? And then we get into the more deep money fears and, you know, triggers. So I don't want to stop that. I don't want to break that relationship and that trust to turn back and say, you know, I might say something like, how does this play into your wanting to make a budget at this time? Mm-hmm. But like the finding those pauses or moments is my real big question.
Yeah. So, and by the way, I love that question that you just shared as a, like bringing back, you know, how to integrate and bring back to the topic at hand if there's nothing to integrate to. So sometimes we can get lucky and then like the client stops for breath and we can get in that moment. That doesn't always happen though. And in those cases, it can feel really scary. You want to do it with respect, full respect and love. But if they're just not coming up for air and it's one long run-on sentence, I want to invite you to just like stretch and play around with this and see if you can. Well, you can. I know you can. I want you to play with interrupting in the middle and saying, you can even say, I know that you're mid-sentence right now. Like, hold on a moment. I know you're mid-sentence. I've been listening really closely. I know there are important pieces here and so much is coming through that before you go any further, I want to ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Are you willing to play with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, I don't know if Wendy wants to respond here, but I feel like we did a little bit of that. And we talked about it in our, you know, after coaching analysis portion. But even mid-sentence, that's a good buffer, softness, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the energetics are everything. The energetics are everything.
Yeah.
Wendy, I know that we haven't heard your voice yet, so you may not want to share. I don't want to put you on the spot, but since AJ mentioned it, do you want to share a little bit about your experience of that being interrupted? See you on the screen. You're like, no, I don't want to share. No, okay. It's fine. Barbara.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of piggyback on that. I find for myself, like, you know, wanting to be kind and interrupting, and that I need to hear a certain amount of what someone's sharing, you know, so maybe they're going to get to a whole cup and I need to at least hear 3/4 to know that, oh, I should get back to that, you know, when it was just a third of a cup. And so it, you know, and maybe that's just kind of how it is because I'm kind of new at this, but it's just kind of like, oh, what? Okay, now we're going off in another direction, but what was really juicy and at the heart of this is way back here, you know, so I don't know, I'm trying to find that balance of, you know, kind of honoring what is and what they're sharing and not letting the heart of the matter get kind of, you know, I don't know what's that word, but, you know, kind of get scattered away, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, oftentimes we just kind of want to share what we're thinking in our heads in the conversation, right? So you might in that moment say, I love this, like, this new direction that we're going in. It feels like there's a lot there, but before we continue with it, I just want to make sure that we don't get away from the heart of what you just said a few moments ago, which was, and then you can reflect it back, and then you can ask a follow-up question from there, right? Like, what was important about that for you?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, couple more categories to think about. Challenge questions. So these aren't exactly questions. I put them as a category. They're more like invitations. You want to ask a challenge question, and they're a little leading, but always based on what you've heard the client say. You want to use a challenge question in a moment when a client is ready to stretch beyond their perceived limitations. You see it, they are ready. They are ready to be lovingly nudged beyond what they think is possible. A challenge question always involves a measurable action. So for example, you're never gonna ask a challenge question at the beginning of a session. Let me just say that too. This is like, we're already getting into some strategizing. You've heard, you've looked maybe at fears, you've unpacked some pattern, you know, whatever it is. So here's an example. I challenge you to generate three sales calls this week. How does that land for you? I challenge you to stop complaining for a full week. What do you think about that? Now, that will come off as judgy if it's in the beginning of the conversation and the client hasn't already established that they don't want to be complaining all the time, right? But if it's placed after you've done an exploration of it, it has a very different impact. Here's another kind of challenge question. I sense that's too easy for you. How can you go further? Now, with challenge questions, no attachment to outcome, your client can accept the challenge, decline the challenge, or negotiate for a different kind of challenge. It's all good, right? And the trick is just to make it motivating and exciting and inspiring, but not shameful if the client isn't up for it. Confrontational questions. These are bold questions. So you want to use confrontational, and there's a better way to say it. Let's not call it confrontational. We call them bold and fierce questions. So these are questions only at the right moment that can help a client really maybe jump over some blocks by creating some tension. Forward movement usually happens with the right combination of, to use Randa's word, softness and a little bit of tension. Again, you want to make sure a client is in the right place before you use a question like this. Here's an example. What if what you just shared wasn't true at all? I feel like, and sometimes I'll say this next one, you know, there's some clients that I would never say this with, and then there are other clients, this next one, that they appreciate this so much. I feel like I want to call BS on what you just said. What do you think about that? Or I might say, even with a client where it's like really tight container and I know they're up for it, my BS detector just went off. What do you think? How have you been clinging on to this relationship to keep you safe? I think that's pretty bold. All right, and then last category for now, encouraging questions. So obviously we always want to be encouraging, but specifically encouraging questions you want to use when a client is like they're right on the verge of thinking about stretching themselves in a certain way, but they just need some extra encouragement, assurance to really take that stretch. So for example, let's say you've got a client that really wants to date and, you know, you've like been looking at what the blocks have been and all the things. And for a long time, they've said they can't date. They're not going to date. It's never going to happen. And then on a session, they're like, I'm thinking about putting up an online dating profile. So it's like they're right there, they're thinking about stretching themselves, but they might just need some extra encouragement. So an encouraging question there is something like, what do you need in order to say yes to creating that online dating profile? Or what would need to be in place? Or what do you want to make sure you include in order to really say yes to it? Or it feels like you're right there. What is it that we need to tweak, inner or outer, so that you feel ready to create that online dating profile this week? So there's a reflection there first, right? Like, it feels like you're right there. I mean, what needs to be tweaked so that this can happen? Okay. As I said earlier, I'm going to say it again, we covered a lot of material today. This is not all to be like integrated and mastered right away. If you are experienced, pick a couple of these categories that you're not currently using to stretch into. If you're new, have the list out in front of you when you're coaching and just practice using different questions. For those of you that have coaching partners that you're working with over this week, when you're actually coaching, just for yourself, set the intention to ask, to really think about your questions, to ask open-ended questions. While you're coaching, take a moment if you need it to pause before asking a question to consider how you want to craft the question. What are the words you want to use? And like I said, if you want to keep a list of questions in front of you, great. When you're reflecting afterwards, I want to invite you to do a couple of things. Number one, reflect on the questions that were asked in the session. Which ones worked? Why did they work? Which ones could be tweaked and how would you tweak them? And then after that, if there's time, look together with your partner at the list of questions from the resource sheet, and each one of you pick one or two questions that could have been asked during the session and at what point. This is a way of building that muscle. And then next time we meet, we'll have our questioning practicum together. Before we wrap, take a moment, write down for yourself, what are you taking away from our session today? There's one thing that you're taking away. What is it? And Jolly's saying there are ways to lovingly interrupt the client. Yes. We're at 2 Eastern exactly, so we are officially done, but I will hang on the line for a few moments if anybody has any questions or anything that they want to share. Sending you all lots of love, and I'll see you soon.